Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a special Mother's Day episode today with Thelma Wiley of Sacramento, California, originally from Georgia. We heard about the sacrifices her own mother made for her and a little bit of the journey that led to Thelma working at McClellan Air Force Base as a civilian. She eventually headed to Vietnam, where she would work at the Binh Hoa Air Base in support of the Republic of Vietnam Air Force. And in early April 1975, with the fall of Saigon imminent, Thelma would end up aboard the doomed first flight of an evacuation effort known as Operation Baby Lift.
I want to have you walk us through that fateful day as much as you can, but there's another piece of this from a human standpoint. When you answered that ad, when you saw your work opportunities here limited, and you decided to go to Vietnam, knowing that there was some danger there, you also had to leave behind your daughter.
I discussed it with her. She was maybe a junior at that time. And I wanted to, like I mentioned about how difficult it is for a single parent, you know. I mean, I made sure that I always have my rent, my food, and my utilities. And it was like a payday every 2 weeks. So much got aside in that payday and the rest in this payday. And sometimes I would have $2 for 2 weeks. I'd fill up my little Volkswagen with gas. That'll last 2 weeks. I did what I needed to do to make things more enjoyable for my child.
Just like your mother had done for you, as you shared. But was that hard to get on that plane and go over to Vietnam and wonder when you're going to see your daughter again?
I knew I could come home and see her. I wasn't too worried about that. But I was sort of blind. And after I got over there, for a little while, I thought I'd lost my mind. But after meeting some people from McClellan and from other ALCs and some Vietnamese people who were nice and friendly, I was okay.
So Operation Baby Lift, what did they tell you? How did you end up on that airplane?
I was not feeling well. These two ladies' friends, one was from Texas, the other's from Oklahoma, they had some friends who lived at headquarters, and they went to live with them when things were getting real bad. She said, we'll know what's going on when they start planning. So if there's anything, I'll make sure that I get in touch with you. So she called me that morning, and she say, T.T., get over, because I was Thelma Thompson then. Get over here as quick as you can. They're having a meeting. So we could always call a car and have it pick me up. And it usually take about 30 minutes to get where I was living from headquarters. And 30 minutes to get back, that was an hour. So the meeting was almost over, and we got our orders, which were classified. They told us to go home and pack, and we couldn't say anything to anyone. I met my housekeeper coming upstairs when I was leaving, and I couldn't, you know, I just said, couldn't tell I'm leaving. We didn't know where it was going. They didn't tell us. And we went back, and they hand us out orders, and we went to the bank. It was Bank of America, and got our travel funds and went to the airport. Then they had a bus take us out to the plane, and we got on it when the plane had started to move, because they had babies on blankets on the floor of the cargo area. I'm going to get this blanket of babies, and trying to position myself where I was going to be. I was at the head of the babies, and someone said, why don't you get up and go around and position yourself at the feet of the babies? And I said, yeah, that's better. I can sort of spread my arms across. Because what they had across the babies was those big loose cargo belts, what they put over the cargo. That's what was across the babies. So I said, well, I can stretch my arms out across the babies and maybe sort of loop my arms in the belt so that anything, I could go flying. But while I was standing up, fixing to get down on my knees with the babies, this flight nurse walked by all my friends standing there. Becky and Twyla, who we lived in the same apartment building, she came to me and asked me if I would go upstairs and help. I didn't want to go, but I said okay. And I told Becky and Twyla my purse and my suitcase is on the other side of the plane, but I didn't want to hold the nurse up by walking over there getting up. When I got upstairs, I was shocked to see that it looked like a commercial plane, except the seats were turned toward the back of the plane. and all was full of babies. Some of the babies were so young. In one seat, they would have, you know, those little pillows they used to give you on the plane, a pillow, a baby, a pillow, a baby, and a pillow in one seat, and then that seat belt across. So it was three seats. I think I had 12 babies that I was going to take her. The nurse told me to choose where I wanted to be. One thing, when the blast happened, that big plane was like it was hanging by its tail. That's the way it just... And after some while, I raised my head to when I felt the pilot was slowing down. He was like, I could hear the engines. And I said, let me see if the pilot is still in trouble or not. I raised my head so I could see the wall of the cabin, and I could see it still tilted. So he just sailed around. He dumped all the fuel, and he sailed around to gain distance. And he would, because he didn't have the mechanics to do that after that blast knocked it out, he would go lower and sail distance. And I prayed. And in my prayer, I said, Lord, I want to live. But don't let me live for me. Let me live for my daughter. And he did that. I started looking at, it was he who directed that nurse to choose me. And when my daughter was sick, we started having a masseuse come in and help us to keep going every week. And I was telling her the story, and she said, how old was Judy? And I said, I had mentioned in the prayer that her father, you took her father a few years ago. She doesn't have anybody. And when she asked me how old was Judy, I said, about 22. And she said, oh, he didn't save you for her then. He saved you for her now, because he's all-knowing. He knows what's going to happen. She said, Judy was old enough to manage by herself, but he saved you for her now. We were so close, my daughter and me.
So to spell it out for people who may not follow, you're saying you believe you were spared in that plane crash to care for your daughter as she battled cancer.
Yes, I do. She was at peace because she knew how much I loved my grandchildren. She loved her children, but she knew that I would guide them and take care of them, give them guidance. Because when Jocelyn was, I guess, about 2.5 or 3, she asked me, Grandma, who do you love more, me or Mommy? So I had to explain to her how God has given us all the ability to express different feelings or degrees of love. I said, like, you love Mommy and you love me, it feels different. And your love for Daddy feels different. And so she understood.
And the crash itself, you know, so you mentioned this blast. Again, I want to make sure people understand what you're saying. When that nurse said, come up here, mm-hmm. She saved your life. Yeah. And the people that were still there, they didn't make it, right?
No one, as far as I know, no one survived that cargo area. Now, there was a 23-year-old medic, and I remember him because he was cute. He was a little young for me, but but he was cute. And he was between the cargo area and upstairs. Have you looked at that crash? You see all of those coils stacked up, everything that functioned. The coils and all that came out of the big plane looked like spaghetti. It was all wrapped around, some of the coils bigger than others. He was in that. He told me his eye was hanging out and that he was in intensive care, I believe, about 6 months or so. And I was in the Philippines hospital at the base hospital for 19 days.
Well, and let's talk about that moment, because I mean, I don't think you have any reason to believe there's going to be a midair disaster, right? You're settling in just focused on these babies?
Yes. The pilot came on and said to what we're going to take off, and we'll sit with our backs to the cabin between the seats or lie on the floor holding on to the seat legs. So to take off, I sat with my back to the cabin because I had plenty of support. But when that explosion happened, just before the explosion happened, we were still climbing, and I got up, and I said, thank you, Lord, we're on our way. By this time, I'd gotten up and checked the babies, and I put my hand on the corner of the seat you know, the back of the seat and looked around, and that's when I thanked the Lord. And by the time I got that out of my mouth, the explosion happened. And so I got on the floor between the seat where I was sitting and held on to seat legs. Of course, my legs, I guess my from my knees out, was in the aisle. And I said, oh my goodness, my legs get cut off, I thought, with debris flying. I tried to, you know how you're a kid and you lie on your stomach and kick your legs up. Well, I tried that and I was bouncing around. I didn't have enough support. So I put my legs back there and I could have my shoes to help me control my legs and so it wouldn't move so much.
And just so I understand, you're seeing and hearing things fly around inside the airplane and fly out the hatch that blew?
No, that troop compartment was anchored in the top of the plane, and I had to go up a rope ladder. I followed the nurse, and it was a rope ladder, a hole in the back of the plane. And we climbed that rope ladder to get up through that hole to get to the troop compartment. But up front, I don't know if they had, they might have had steps to get up there because they were close to the cockpit. And when we crashed, the cockpit broke off.
So if you can, and you told us about, you know, your prayer and all of that, but can you take us from that moment where the explosion happens to that moment of impact? And I don't know if that went by quickly or if that felt like slow motion, but help us understand how you experienced it.
From the time we took off, you know, we were still climbing at 23,000 feet. So, and the plane was, you know, sometime I would go to Thailand for rest. Once we came in, they would go up sharp, come down like that. And it would be difficult to keep your back against the seat. We'd be coming in so sharply because of prevent being shot down, being up so long. But that was why I got up off the floor between the seats to check the babies, because I thought we were maybe out of danger. I had no idea that that was going to happen. I was, well, all I could think about was my child. But those babies, not many babies in that troop compartment, I don't think not many babies perished. They were protected pretty good. Another thing I did, that when I got up to check the babies, and I saw this little boy about three rows back. He was maybe the complexion of my granddaughter. Oh, with big black silky curls. And I went over and talked to him like you talk to little children. And I caught his hand, and I put my arm beside his arm and told him, see, like we're the same. His eyes were so dead. And I thought, maybe he's been treated so poorly he doesn't know how to smile. Because usually when you talk to little children like that, they smile, you know. Yeah, he was so handsome.
Did you guys have, you know, warning that impact was coming?
We didn't have any windows to see. Now, after we were disconnected from the main out of the plane top, there were some windows you can see, and those were exits. And a little long slab laying over there by itself. And I said, that's the thing I crawled out of.
That moment of impact, what did that feel like?
It was quick and hard. The pilot said we became airborne again, because he said the faster he got, the closer he got to the ground, the faster the plane was traveling. He couldn't control it. So I believe that the impact was so strong that it made the plane bounce. But when it did, when it came down again, it hit the hard portion that enclosed the river. It's like the levees on our rivers. Well, that Saigon River had the hard edge around there, and it hit that. Then it just drug for, they said, like a half a mile. And when it did that, I think everything just came apart, because you see pieces of it here. On the ground there, it looks like the floor of the plane. You know, it's sort of ribbed, and like everything left that floor of the plane there on the mud. That stack of coils that maneuvered the function of the plane, what the pilot had to use to maneuver the plane. Well, they was just all tied up and piled over. You just don't see anything that looks like an airplane except the cockpit.
And did you lose consciousness at all?
I think I might have When I was sliding down the aisle, I was headed toward the front of the plane where everything was flying. And I realized that if I ended up down there, there was no hope. So I caught the leg of one of the, it was about three-fourths the distance. I caught one of the legs, held onto it, and was pulling myself up between when something slammed very hard in my back, flying down from the toward the front. And that's when I felt that it's like knocked the breath out of me. And because there were so many children out already, I don't think that would have been time for that many children to get outside unless I had blacked out. I mean, it was, when I looked up, I was in exit right there at that place I pulled up in. And when I opened it, there was a girl, maybe about a young lady, about 21 or 2. I believe she ran on the armrest of the seats from toward that dangerous area. Before I could put the door down or the exit door down on the floor, I was trying to put it outside. She ran on the seat arms and skippity, skippity, skip. Let's get out of here. And I was frightened by her, and I stood back and she just flew out of the exit. And that was the one who lost her ear. I saw her again at the hospital in the Philippines, and she had a bandage up. And I don't know if she knew her ear was cut off and found it and carried it with her, or someone went back to the plane and got it. I don't know. But one of the flight nurses died. I read that. I don't think it was the one who asked me, because she maybe was a captain, and the other one maybe was a lieutenant or something like that.
138 people were killed in the tragic inaugural flight of Operation Babylift. 78 of them were children that evacuation effort was designed to save. Thelma Wiley is one of 176 aboard that C-5 who survived, something she views as miraculous. We'll hear more about why she feels that way when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.
Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. Over 1,500 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.